What happens when an entire population becomes invisible in plain sight? While global headlines flash with conflicts across continents, one struggle persists with remarkable consistency, yet remains systematically misunderstood. The Israeli-Palestinian conflict has been framed, reframed, and packaged for international consumption in ways that obscure its fundamental nature. This isn't merely another territorial dispute or religious clash. It's a story of settler colonialism, systematic displacement, and the power of language to hide oppression behind diplomatic vocabulary. Understanding Palestine means peeling back layers of carefully constructed narratives to reveal what's been happening since the late 19th century and what continues today. We're taught to discuss Palestine using sanitized terms: peace process, two-state solution, complexity. This dictionary of peace orthodoxy makes colonial displacement appear impossibly complicated. Israel receives 80% of historical Palestine. Palestinians get 20%. Yet we call this fair compromise. The vocabulary performs magic. Settlements sounds temporary, not like permanent cities. Negotiations implies equal parties, not an occupied population bargaining with its occupier. Early Zionist settlers openly used Hebrew words meaning colonize, terms embraced when colonialism was celebrated. After World War II, the terminology shifted through strategic rebranding. Reframing this as settler colonialism places Palestine alongside other historical struggles and explains policies focused on maximizing land control while minimizing Palestinian presence. South Africans who survived apartheid consistently say, after visiting the West Bank, "This is worse than what we experienced." Israeli land laws systematically exclude Palestinian citizens from state lands. A matrix of permits, checkpoints, and barriers fragments Palestinian territory into disconnected enclaves. Movement requires permissions that can be arbitrarily denied. Imagine needing military permission to visit family or reach a hospital. The 2018 nation-state law made explicit what had long been implicit. Israel is constitutionally defined as a state for Jews, with non-Jews holding different status. Different legal systems apply to different populations on the same land, the textbook definition of apartheid. If the problem is temporary occupation, the solution is withdrawal. But if it's systematic apartheid embedded in state structure, the solution requires fundamental transformation. In 1948, 750,000 Palestinians were expelled and over 500 villages destroyed. The Nakba, the catastrophe. We're taught this was tragic, but finished. That's wrong. The Nakba became operational policy. When mass expulsion became politically impossible, Israel developed sophisticated alternatives, legal mechanisms making Palestinian land ownership nearly impossible, urban planning restrictions preventing community expansion, administrative procedures revoking residency rights, and house demolitions destroying homes while nearby settlements flourish. Israeli officials openly discuss the demographic threat of Palestinian population growth. Families cannot reunite across borders. Birth rates are monitored. The logic? Maximize Jewish presence, minimize Palestinian presence. This explains seemingly disconnected policies: demolishing Palestinian homes, preventing citizens from building on their land, sealing Gaza's borders. These aren't random security measures. They're systematic demographic engineering spanning 70 years. How does a democratic society maintain systematic oppression? Through comprehensive cultural immersion from birth. From kindergarten through military service, Israelis learn: Jews returned to their ancestral homeland, Palestinians attacked them, Israel has defended itself since. This story is reinforced through education, media, military service, and daily conversation. When Israelis see rockets from Gaza or suicide bombings, these appear as unprovoked violence, confirming Palestinians are dangerous. The decades of occupation, displacement, and siege that preceded this resistance become invisible. It's like watching only a film's second half and concluding the protagonist is inexplicably violent. This creates what some call moral corruption, a society where young people view Palestinian children as future threats, where military operations killing thousands are celebrated, where dissent is treated as treason. What if the peace process wasn't designed to achieve peace, but to prevent it while appearing to pursue it? After 1967, Israel faced a dilemma. It wanted conquered land, but not its Palestinian population. Three contradictory goals followed: no mass expulsion, no return of territory, and no citizenship for Palestinians, requiring elaborate control systems disguised as temporary arrangements. The vocabulary of peace became the language of permanent occupation. Autonomy meant Palestinians managed schools and garbage, while Israel controlled borders, resources, and security. The Oslo Accords divided the West Bank into areas A, B, and C, with Israel maintaining overarching control throughout. Gaza exemplifies this dynamic. Israel's 2005 disengagement was presented as a peace gesture, but privately described as freezing the peace process, turning Gaza into a sealed enclave with controlled borders and imprisoned population. The two-state solution has become impossible because Israel systematically eliminated the territory required for a viable Palestinian state. What remains are disconnected enclaves surrounded by settlements, walls, and military zones. Yet the peace process continues, providing cover while Greater Israel becomes reality. Gaza, 365 square kilometers, holding 1.8 million people who cannot leave. Fishing rights extend only kilometers offshore. Building materials banned. Exports forbidden. Imports calculated for bare survival. Electricity runs hours daily. Clean water scarce. Unemployment exceeds 50%. Every few years, Israeli military operations, CAS lead, pillar of defense, protective edge, destroy infrastructure, kill thousands, traumatize the population. The pattern repeats. Israel maintains siege and periodic violence. Hamas observes ceasefires until Israeli escalation provokes response. Israel launches massive assault, claiming self-defense. International community expresses concern, but takes no action. Gaza rebuilds under siege, repeat. This constitutes incremental genocide, systematic creation of conditions making life impossible. Israel controls Gaza's calories, calculating precisely how much food to allow. When Hamas won democratic elections in 2006, the international community punished Palestinians by intensifying the siege. The message? Democracy only if they elected leaders acceptable to Israel and the U.S. Israeli society shows disturbing consensus. Polls consistently show over 90% support during military assaults. Western governments provide diplomatic cover, blocking UN resolutions and continuing military aid, allowing the cycle to continue indefinitely. South Africa's transformation offers a blueprint. Apartheid once seemed permanent, defended as security necessity. Change came through international pressure combined with internal resistance, the same dynamic now emerging for Palestine. The BDS movement has shifted global discourse despite fierce opposition. Universities debate complicity, artists reconsider performances, companies withdraw investments. Most significantly, younger generations, including young Jews worldwide, increasingly reject inherited narratives. The decisive factor is the United States. Without American diplomatic protection, military aid, and political support, Israeli policies couldn't continue. Every assault uses American weapons. Every critical UN resolution faces American veto. American citizens hold unique power. Pressure from civil society, campuses, religious organizations, and grassroots movements can change U.S. policy, as it did when Congress overrode Reagan's veto on South African sanctions. The path forward requires reframing the conflict from complicated dispute to settler colonialism and apartheid accurate terms that clarify rather than obscure. This means centering Palestinian voices, connecting Palestine to broader justice struggles, and building coalitions across movements for racial justice, indigenous rights, and anti-imperialism. the refugee question must be central. 7 million people with the right to return home. One state with equal rights becomes both moral necessity and practical reality. The question isn't whether one state exists, it does, but whether it will be apartheid or democratic.
We've been taught to look away from Palestine, told it's too complex, too controversial, but looking clearly reveals something straightforward: systematic displacement, legal discrimination, and military occupation sustained for over 70 years. The complexity isn't in understanding what's happening, it's in the structures built to hide and justify it. Palestine matters beyond Palestine. It reveals how colonialism adapts and persists, how language obscures oppression, how democracies maintain ethnic hierarchies, and how international law becomes meaningless without enforcement. These patterns repeat globally in indigenous struggles, refugee crises, and fights against systemic racism. The question isn't whether change is possible. History proves it is. It's whether enough people will recognize injustice and act accordingly. Every movement for justice faced the same dismissals: too complicated, too controversial, too late. Yet change came when people refused to accept the unacceptable. When you encounter the language of obfuscation, complexity, both sides, peace process, ask what's being hidden. When someone justifies oppression with security concerns, question whose security matters. Supporting Palestinian rights doesn't require opposing Jewish safety. It requires opposing systems that grant rights based on ethnicity. The keys Palestinian refugees hold aren't just metal objects. They're claims to justice, reminders that what was taken can be returned.